Shajya dhubha la chadze lo chudu gyabzu che wa chumdende deshi Chajumbha yandava dzobe sanje rikpa dan shabzu denpa tewara shikpa chikde Kibu dhubha kalu gyurwa lana meba lada menam je tumba sanje Pekya wa shajya dhubha la chadze lo chudu gyabzu che gudba chumdende deshi Chajumbha yandabha dzobe sanje rikpa dan shabzu denpa tewara shikpa chikden kempe kibu Lanna meba lada menam je dunba sanje chumdende pekya wa shajya dhubha la chadze lo chudu che oye lama dang gampo Tungu jishin sishin nyeje doga lekban Kanda sibe tsura mare Mendoma donye kisebe Jozo gula puji tarze Yela chuchu yangden Chudar chedro nyemo nyelo Lege chadro chuse che Mari mense donye nyungo chenye junze rati Tune daji saji tarisun yendun lunzo gyanze tobe Da juda juni gende talu mense jambi yanglandu Arabaza nadi Omo Arabaza nadi Omo Arabaza nadi Kege kera veze ke Talu temo mumbarab seve Kadan tenju shonglu tobaye Lodzhi bobe na wa tse do tse Medo dhamma re ra ling shi nyen de gen ba an de San je shen la me de bu wa yi Drogun nam da shen la ju bara ya jo Lame tamba ke nama anje chugu kala kenze chenchen Che dara tsambe dujan zema alay savge chwe chaba abdo se Naya daya me Jalan Zoye Jonamala Chanju Bhagdo Tane Kyamso Tage Chuchi Jebe Sonamake Tola Penje Sanje Ndrubarasho Chudan Zoye Jonamala Chanju Bhagdo Tane Kyamso Tage Chuchi Chuchi Jebe Sonamake Tola Penje Sanje Ndrubarasho Sanje chudan soje chon Pardu dhani javzu je Tagi chushi jibe sona Pinji sanje jubara Ladan lami midami anji Ombudan jajin lasu chuji chola Chava cheva nama Sanje sumbaram du shishin tebe gyugyub Deda shige dambe shunye jenende shige namol haye yadan ludan nujenge dhubun dadami yegenanda chokunje chana chizam 탐제 개도 타게 쳇던도 Good morning. Can you hear now? Is the speaker on?
Speaker's on. Did you turn them on?
I think it's not on. I'm so sorry that last week, because I spoke so softly, those who are sitting behind, they couldn't really catch what I was saying. Yeah, that's better. So here we are. We are trying to live in 21st century. So that's why we have the PowerPoint. So how was your week? One whole week. Remember last week we talked about how to achieve lasting happiness. And I think we discussed few ways, few methods to achieve that. Has any of you put them into tests? Want to share? Please.
Well, when I realized that some delusions were arising, I would stop and then analyze it and change it from a delusion to an asset.
Okay, that's very good.
Something virtuous.
Very good, very good. Anybody else? Those who were present last Sunday, has it made any difference in your life? Yeah, that's important. I wanted to emphasize that. Because most of you, I can see that you are all, you know, very advanced. Senior students, you have listened to Dharma teachings years after years. And I can see that you are vigorously making notes. But if you don't put into practice, then what is the point? Yeah, after me, another Lama will come. You will attend the teaching. Yes, make notes, keep it there. And then that's it. There's no real change. So what is the point? So that's why I wanted to emphasize from the beginning that it is very important to try to practice. We all subscribe to this scientific approach. We like when we talk about scientific research, scientific finding. The scientific approach is when you test whether that hypothesis works or not. So last week we talked about all this. So you have to put them into tests, experiment all this, and whether it works or not. If you never put them into experiment, if you never test them, you would never know. But if you put them into practice, test them, and then if you find that it works, what will happen is it will encourage you to do more. Because you see that, yeah, this is something, it works. That's what we have to do. And I think I told you from the beginning that I'm so happy to be, you know, sharing this. And I shared with, I think, Ken and Anthony that when I first decided to take this offer to teach at Kachuling, since then, I have been making special prayers. You know, when we do prayers, normally at the end we have this dedication. I have been making special dedication that may I be able to, normally I always pray that may I be able to benefit other sentient beings, as many people as possible. But I have included extra, a specific one. May I be able to help the members here, those who come here, really to help, to make a difference in your life. That's what I have always been doing. And this is two ways, you know. If I just pray, I say, and if you don't do anything, no, nothing will happen. We have to work together.
So let's make this a different story. You have been attending teachings all these years. Let's make this a different one. We can work together. I will try my best. I told you I'm not a great scholar. I don't know in depth of all this philosophy and all this concepts, all this. I don't have any realization or anything. But I'm trying my best to share what little I know. And then if you put them into practice, and even, let's say here we have 13 or 14 people, even one person put them into practice, even for one day, I will be happy that at least it served a purpose. So that's why my request from the beginning is, please, make this a different story. Don't be in the same pattern, same habit. That's what we have been doing, and that's why we are still here. There's no progress. We are all the time accustomed to doing the same thing. And you know what Einstein said about insane? Anybody? The definition, Einstein's definition of insane.
I didn't know it was him, but insanity is doing the same thing, expecting a different,
yeah. Doing the same thing again and again, expecting a different result. That is insane. That's the act of insanity. We are not, I guess. Yeah, so we have to. I wanted to emphasize this point. And even in it, there's a story in the sutra that during Buddha's time, Buddha was teaching every evening, or the Buddha has been giving teaching sermons, and people have been coming. And then there was one person, a group of people, and they realized that many of these people, those who attend Buddha's teachings, they really progress. They achieve realizations. They are really progressing onto different paths. Whereas there are this group of people, they have been attending Buddha's practice for years, but there is no realization. So one day this guy approached Buddha and asked Buddha, he said that, why is it that many of your students, they achieve realizations, whereas some of us do not? So Buddha, being very skillful, so Buddha asked, where are you from originally? So I said, he said, where are you from? He said, oh, I'm from this area. So where are you originally from? He said, oh, I am actually from another town, and I moved it here. Then Buddha says, do you go there often? So, of course, first Buddha asks, what do you do for your livelihood? He said, well, I'm a merchant. So he said, what, do you still go to this old home or town? He said, yes, I do. So I guess you are very familiar with the road to your town, because those days there are no cars, you have to walk. He said, yes, I am very familiar. And even if I'm blindfolded, I could find my way. Oh, that's very good. But because you are very familiar with, I guess people also come to seek your guidance on how to get to your place, your town. Yes, many people come to ask for directions. And as Buddha asked, do you give them directions? Yes. So those who all came to ask for directions, do they all get to your town? He said, no, some people don't even go there. They just ask and sit back. They never travel. That's Buddha says, exactly. If you don't walk, you know the direction how to get there. But if you don't walk there, if you don't travel, you will never get to that destination. So likewise, Buddha said that here among you, if you don't practice, you will never attain any realization. So that's what Buddha said about the importance of practicing, putting them into practice, integrating what we learn in our daily life. So that's very important. I wanted to emphasize. So don't forget that, you know, we are working together. From here you can make a, what you call, determination that, okay, whatever I learn today, I may not be able to put everything to practice, but at least I will try to put at least one method or one thing. Then that's how we built our practice. The ocean is all the collection of rivers. There is no just one ocean. It's all a drop can make an ocean. So we should do that. So I just wanted to recap what we discussed. I guess it helps to turn it on, isn't it? Okay, never mind. We talk about what Dharma practice means, what Dharma really means. So we discuss and come to the conclusion that motivation plays a central role in determining whether our practice becomes a Dharma practice or not. Even coming here, if your intention is to just being an expert in Buddhist philosophy and Buddhist psychology, or your intention is that also that you know you attend this class, you learn a lot, and people will you will become famous amongst your friends or the, so these are all wrong intention. Of course, we have discussed about, you know, doing practice for this very life, longevity, fame, wealth, all this. So that's why when we started the prayer, we have done this Sangye Chodong Tsogyi Chonamla. So that is the motivation. So whatever activity we are going to do, we are trying to motivate to do with the intention to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of other sentient beings. So that's what we call the bodhicitta motivation. So always watch your motivation. Even though you think that you are doing some Dharma activity, always check your, it is important to check your motivation. Am I doing this to make myself famous, to achieve some praise, or for this life's whatever, you know, wealth, whatever it is. So sometimes, you know, we will discuss later. Then we talked about happiness. Happiness in individual declines when the individual's belief of what is important in life revolves around materialism. We talked about pursuit of materialism, how pursuit of materialism is actually a futile attempt to achieve happiness. And I think we have stories, I mean not really stories, from our own experience. We know that, you know, we always have this misconception that, oh, rich people must be happier. But that is not the case. We know that. And from the news, we know that recently there are suicides. People who are famous committed suicides. Just to give you an example, Kate Spade, a fashion designer, famous, so many brands, so many outlets. But she was found dead. And they say that she committed suicide. Why? She must be unhappy to commit suicide. Like Anthony Bourdain, is it? Bourdain. How do you pronounce? Bourdain.
Bourdain.
Committed suicide. And there we hear so many celebrities committing suicides. And then, yeah, intake of those substance. Why? Why aren't they happy? They have wealth, they have millions of dollars. And we discuss why material pursuit cannot guarantee happiness. Because our desire has no limit. Unless we practice contentment, there is no limit to our desire. The more you get, the more you want. I don't know whether I shared with you this study where they went and asked people, those who are earning 50,000, they asked them, what would make your life happier? And they said, oh, if I earn, those who are earning, let's say, 25,000, they said, oh, if I earn 50,000, I would be happier. And then they went and asked those who are earning 50,000, and they said, oh, if I earn 100,000, I would be happier. And then those who are earning 100,000, they said, yeah, my life would be better, and I would be happier if I started to earn 200,000. So you can see that. When we have this one, we think that, oh, if I get this, I will be happier. But when we get there, we want more. So there's no limit. But if you do something here, contentment, if you try to focus on what you have and not on what you don't have, you will be much happier. Recently, I was listening to one of the geshe, a very great scholar from Losiling Monastery, and he was saying that when he was in monastery, the condition was very, very poor. And during the rainy seasons, there are leaks. But now that he has three rooms, nice rooms, sometimes he feels like, oh, this is not enough. But then he says this, just thinking back of his situation when he was in monastery, when you think, oh, I had that leaky room, but I was happy there. So when you think back of that, it says it helps. So this is all contentment. Then the problem is afflictive mental states are real. We discuss about it. We have this tendency. We have this tendency to blame or attribute our unhappiness to others or conditions and situations. Whenever we are unhappy, we will say, oh, I'm very unhappy because this person did this, that person did this, or I'm very unhappy because the situation is like this. We never say that, oh, I'm unhappy because I am thinking in this particular way. I'm unhappy because I'm not able to think this way. I'm not able to have that kind of mental attitude. We never say that. We always try to find something to blame. So in psychology, there's something called self-serving bias, which is the tendency to attribute your own success, to yourself, and then your failure to others and conditions. So that is not the case. The real enemy is inside. We don't realize that. We have been so friendly with our enemies, all the time just carrying out the orders. We never even question. So we have to recognize or identify that the real enemy is the afflictive emotions, anger, hatred, jealousy, whatnot. So this then comes to the conclusion that our happiness actually lies in our own state of mind. And so too do the primary obstacles to happiness. So we try to fix our situations. We try to fix the external factors, external conditions. So that is why we never achieve lasting happiness, because we are trying to fix the wrong one. In Tibetan, we have a saying, "Deshargu chosu nevala nulu guru tonga tyanu chungs." In Tibetan, yeah, Tibetans like to ask to do definition. When somebody is sick, all these things, that they will go and ask a Rinpoche to do checking for them. And then normally, checking, they will say, oh, there's some spirit harm, or it's caused by this, that. And then there will be recommendations of a series of pujas or prayers. So some of these pujas involve sending a doorman. So if the home is in the east, if you send the doorman to the west, it doesn't help. If you are feeling cold, Minnesota, I was told it's very cold during winters. So if the sun is coming from here and you think, oh, I'm feeling cold, oh, let's face the west. No, you will be cold. You won't be hot. So that's why we have been doing this all our years. The problem is here, but we look for something else. The troublemaker is here, we look outside. We try to fix outside somewhere else. That's the problem. There was this to illustrate the point that it is all our mindset. So I heard about this story that during the early years when Tibetans, when they resettled India, so the condition was very bad. So the monks, they live in houses, very old, kind of run-down houses. And when on rainy days, there's a lot of, the rain comes in. So there was this, in a place called Dalhousie, there was this elderly monk. So his room, people know that it's very leaky. So one day there was a strong rain, big rain, and the rest, others, his friends, were very concerned. Oh, he must be, you know, because they can see that they, even their house, which is supposed to be better, also the rain's coming in. So they said, oh, he must be, you know, in a big mess and must be so troubled. So they went out of concern. They went to see him. And you know what they found to their amazement? He has moved the bed to the middle of the house, because no point, you know, trying to plug the holes. It is impossible. There's so many holes, so all coming. And he has moved the bed in the middle, and he was just lying on his bed with his leg crossed and whistling away and, you know, dangling his feet with the umbrella on. So you see, you would imagine that in that kind of situation, he would be so, what do you call, stressed and full of anxiety, worried. No, he was whistling away, he's just singing song. So that shows that your situation, no matter how worse the situation is, if your mindset is in the right place, it doesn't bother you. And then this Geshe was telling us that during his time in monastery also this, yeah, we have those house and then it leaks. He says that his room, when there are rains, also there will be, you know, drops coming in. And in order to, you know, not to flood the house, he would use this pot here, that pot here, that mug here, and then it will kind of create a music. And he said that he used to enjoy that. Listen to that. Cling, pong, ding, pong. You know, it creates a music. You see, that's the attitude. You see, if we are faced with that kind of situation, we would respond completely differently. Each one of us would respond differently. If it is not about our mindset, it is really about external things, then all the 10 people, all of us, our responses should be exactly the same. But we can tell that's not. I will be really stressed. I may even leave somewhere, go SLS. But some of you may be very quiet, do meditation, who knows? So this shows that it's all about here. If you're able to have the right kind of mental attitude or mindset, frame of mind, yeah, happiness, even if you say, I don't want happiness, it will come. But here, if you don't do anything, and if you're trying to do, try to do something else, and you say, I want happiness, I don't want unhappiness, yeah, it will not happen. So this leads to the question. So this is all about mind. So it's mental training. So from our own experience, we know that it's not easy to change our habit. From the Buddhist point of view, we have taken so many lives in the past. Of course, we will take more as well. So why we find ourselves when it comes to negative mental states, anger, jealousy, hatred, it comes so quickly, effortlessly, we are able to generate that. We don't have to generate, it just comes, arises. But when it comes to positive mental states, compassion, love, gratitude, forgiveness, no matter how we try, it is not easy. It is so difficult. Why? So from Buddha said, because all these lifetimes we were accustomed to, we are habituated in engaging in these mental states that it has become our second nature now. It just comes. So that's why we need to accustom, we need to reverse that habit. Instead of being familiar with the negative mental states, we have to make more familiar or familiarize ourselves more to the positive mental states. That's why it is about meditation. Look at the dog. I think you have seen this. Those boys trapped in a tunnel. And they were there for how many days? Over 20 days? Yeah, long time. But they survived. Eventually they were safely rescued. And many news media report that it is all because that they meditated. Have you been meditating? I'm sure. I think my question is kind of an insult to you. So have you been? Of course, you have been doing meditation. So you can, yeah, I don't have to go into detail the benefits. So now the question now is, what is meditation? Do we really understand the meaning of meditation? Is this meditation? Can you read? It says, in your mind's browser, clear your cache. Now delete your history. Now navigate to a blank web page. Is this meditation? So meditation is not about blanking the mind. There is a pervasive misunderstanding that meditation is all about blanking our mind. Just don't think anything, just sit there. That's not meditation. How about this one? It says, imagine a quiet state, an oasis of calm where you leave behind all of your clutter and noise and distractions and experience a true face, peace. What do you think? Why is this a meditation? When you do this, when you go to a quiet place, let's say you have been to a holiday, to a beach or whatever, so you just think about that nice place with the blue sea and I don't know what else. You just have that image. Is that meditation? Meditation is not about thinking something pleasant. So then, what is meditation? In Sanskrit, it's called bhavana. So bhavana literally means cultivate or cultivation. We can cultivate a lot of things. Even you cultivated this morning all that veggie from your garden. But we don't say that, oh, I meditated. So it's about cultivation of inner qualities, the positive mental states. We are expert in cultivating negative mental states. Very good, we have done that so well. So equivalent term, the Tibetan equivalent term to bhavana is called gom. So gom literally means familiarize. So if you familiarize with something, what happens? It becomes automatic. In monastery, we have these special months like Sagadawa. So Sagadawa, we try to do a lot of practices. And then sometimes yeah, you decided to, let's say, oh, this Sagadawa, I will do a lot of, let's say, Migdzima recitation, the Lama Tsongkhapa's praise. So that's a four line. So you try to do that. And then along the way, let's say 2 weeks later, wherever you go, wherever, it just comes automatically. It has become so automatic, the way you drive home. So when you first drive to your office or back home, yeah, you have to really focus. And then after driving to and fro for several times, then sometimes you don't, oh, I'm already back home. You don't even realize. So that's the purpose. That's what it's about, familiarization. It is about training and transforming the mind. So the purpose of meditation is to train and transform one's mind into one with a positive mental attitude. So this raises a question, is it possible? From our own experience, like, it is not possible. Because anger and all this so easy, but the positive mental state is so difficult. So is it possible or not? Answered by this. Of course, in scriptural texts, we say that, of course, everything is based, Buddhahood, even the concept of enlightenment is based on that. Yes, it is possible. But some of may you already have your own experience that, you know, let's say if you realize that you have some issues, let's say anger issue, if you try to work on it, it helps. And we have come across people, when we met that person, let's say, 10 years ago, oh, that person is really disgusting and, you know, obnoxious, is it? What does that mean?
Disagreeable.
Ah, that kind of obnoxious person. But later, 10 years later, you meet him and, wow, what a different person he has become. That shows that one can change. And let me share with you my own experience. When I first joined monastery, you can hear me, yeah? Okay. When I joined monastery, so monastery, of course, we have to go to Tibet. So that was, I think, maybe my first few months. So I went to Tibet. So normally in monastery, the Tibet, we have morning Tibet and night Tibet. So night Tibet, every Tibet, first we Tibet, we pair with another monk and then we debate. So one person will sit down, another will stand up and put forth questions, and then later we will swap. And then towards the end, so 11, so normally monastery, you cannot leave the debating courtyard before 11 p.m. So around 11 something, then we will form a small kind of group debate. So let's say if I'm debating with somebody else, others will come and, you know, watch what is going on, and then they will also take part. So that's the practice. So I was debating with one of the monks, And he was ridiculing me. He ridiculed me and all that. And then people, of course, there are onlookers, people watching. And then I have this ego, yeah. I am Rinpoche. How dare this ordinary monk ridicule me? So my ego comes in, and when he said all these things, I flare into anger. And I retorted him with all kinds of insults. It's just instant. To my utter surprise, you know what the monk did? He laughed and laughed. That moment, I was so embarrassed. That moment, I felt very shallow, small, how small I was. I expected him to say more, but he laughed. There was no sign of anger. And here I am, a Rinpoche, so angry and saying all these things. And there, his ordinary monk laughing at me. I was so embarrassed. That night, I couldn't sleep. This kept playing in my mind. And eventually, I decided that, oh, I think for the first time, I realized that I have the anger issue. Then I decided to do something about it. And since then, I tried my best. But don't test me, okay? I still get angry. But at least, I can see the process. Let's say when I'm having an irritating conversation, I can see anger building up. Earlier, it didn't have this gap. Just something, boom. But now I can see, oh, okay, it's coming up. Relax. Cool down. So this shows that, yes, it's trainable. You can train. And sometimes we have this tendency, oh, you know, I was born like that, you know. Oh, I am like this. This is my nature, you know. That's not true. That's an excuse. You can change. So that's why brain plasticity. So for many years, there was this view, the scientists, they believed that when you were, let's say, below, I think, 20 years, your brain can change. New neurons can grow, and new connections can be formed between synapses and neurons and all that. But once you reach a certain age, let's say 20 years, it's at that. That's it. Nothing changes there. Whatever you have, that's it. That was a pervasive view held for a long time. And then I think maybe two decades or 20 years or 10 years, then they said, no, that's not true. Brain, repeated practice, if you engage in something repeatedly, yeah, it changes your brain formation. A new brain, new part of brain can be born. And this is normally, they say that, let's say, if a person who is born deaf, because it's deaf, so no sensation, no input is coming from this. So his auditory, is it? Auditory, that part of the brain, is not really corresponding to this one. So what happens, brain works in its own way. So it started to use that part of brain for your visual. So that's why deaf people, they can read your lips so well, because they are actually using this part of brain for this purpose. So that shows that there is change happening in brain. And then there are other research, famous research. One is the London cab drivers. So they did compare the brain of London cab drivers and non-cab drivers. And they found that the cab drivers, part of the brain that is used for memorization, yeah, that part is thicker compared to other people. So therefore, the more you use that part of brain, it happens. So that's why we have this famous phrase, train your mind, change your brain. So because many scientists say, oh, there's no mind, it's all about brain. Even if that, we agree that. So your practice, whatever you do, the environmental influence can change your brain. So if you practice repeatedly, that's why we say the meditation is like going to the gym. If you go to the gym consistently, yes, you can build your muscle. So it is possible. So through training, through mental training, through practice, you can change. This is, I showed it here. You know the squirrels, they are so hyperactive. If this squirrel can sit for that duration, first I thought, oh, he's meditating. It's already quite a long time, isn't it? Mm-hmm. For a squirrel.
I won't say squirrel mind anymore.
This is in front of the house. So you got the idea. It's still halfway. So my point is, if this squirrel can stand there for that span of time, so what excuse do we have? So don't come with, you know, these excuses, I cannot, you see. So now the process of training. So all this transformation does not happen instantly. In just one session, even though we live in instant culture, we have instant noodle, we have instant coffee, but you cannot expect for instant transformation or I don't know, instant meditation or I don't know, enlightenment, whatever. So there's no such thing. You have to go through the process. So what is the process? First, there are three levels of understanding. So the first one is gaining understanding derived through study. So let's say today I'm talking about meditation. I'm talking about benefits of mental training. So that's the first thing. You need to hear this. You need to, you can read, listen. So that's the first level, first step. So once you have read or you have listened, you have heard on that concept or that topic, if you just leave it there, then that's intellectual. And then yeah, it will quickly disappear from your memory. And in months' time, oh, you have a vague recollection. Yeah, at that time, yeah, something like that. But you have no recollection. So we should progress to the second level. Second level is gaining understanding derived through critical analysis. So now you go home and do contemplation. So what is this about? Oh, he said this and this and this. Oh, I read this book, here he says. So that's very important. Because we read a lot of books. We see this information, that information, that. We are actually flooded by information. So we need to really sit down and think through. Then you will progress to the next level. Then you will, of course, at that level you may not arrive at the conviction level. But you will, that's true. I see why they say it is like this. So that only comes when you spend time in contemplation. If you just listen and go home, there is no conviction. There is no, your understanding is just shallow. After this, the next level is gaining understanding derived through meditative experience. So you have heard about this, you have listened to that topic, and you have spent time contemplating on it. Now you have to meditate on it. So like for compassion, you hear, first you go and listen about compassion, the benefits, the disadvantages, and how to do that. And then you go home and think about it. Yeah, compassion, yeah, true. Yeah, if I have compassion, this and this happens. Yeah, it's true. It is really a source of happiness. And then you try to cultivate. That's when you will be able to engender in yourself. So these are the three processes. So in order to do that, His Holiness suggests this approach to mental training, two-prong approach to mental training. So one is restraining our destructive mental states. So we have two things happening. First, we have those negative mental states or the destructive mental states like anger, hatred, jealousy. These, when they arise, it destroys our peace of mind. That's why it is called affliction. In Tibetan, it's called nyumung. So the minute nyumung arises or the mental affliction arises, there's no peace. Jealousy, for example. If you have jealousy towards your neighbor, first of all, you will be watching all the time what they are doing or they are doing. And then when you see something, it really destroys your peace of mind. And sometimes, you cannot even sleep. This will keep you awake. So what is the point? So we have, on the one hand, we have this. And then on the other hand, we have to develop this. So we have to reduce this, bring this down, and then push this up. That's how we have to train ourselves. If you don't bring this down, no way. But in order to bring this down, you need to replace. Like anger, in order to reduce anger, you have to bring the compassion, the tolerance, patience, all this. That's the two-prong approach. So in order to do that, in order to tackle or reduce the destructive mental states, we need to make a strong resolve. So that will only happen when you are able to identify the disadvantages. So if you don't see the disadvantages, the destructions it causes, then you won't be able to generate this resolve. So anger, for example, if you have anger, in the text, it says the civilization kevo tambala pandan ludan lume shevala pandan ludan. Wait. No, not civilization. Midu susu sheje tamba mimbati tsudan tsume sheve namju cho sheje misu leje tigwa yumayins. Anger, for example, it says that it will result in achieving ugly body. So that's what we are talking about next birth. But in this very life, if somebody gets into anger, you can see that the person turns completely different. Even the person generally looks nice or pretty or handsome, whatever it is, the moment the anger arises in the person, the face becomes red, and actually it becomes scary. And then what happens? It clouds your judgment. You would say or do things that you would never even dream about doing. You would insult a person whom has been the, what you call, your, who has been the kindest to you. We know from our own experience what happens with anger. Only thing is that we regret. That's too late. And look at actually all these relationship problems. It's all about anger. In anger, you say something else. Tibetan, we have a saying, Tamla nongar meja, meaning tumbur tups. I think there's an equivalent saying in English. But what it means is that your words, even though it doesn't have the sharpness, but it can still cut your heart into pieces. Is there an equivalent phrase in English?
Speech that cuts like a knife.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where. So even though it doesn't have any, you know, sharp edges, whatever it is, but when you say it, it really hurts. And I think you have come across this analogy or metaphor that there's a teacher who asks the students, every time, you know, you get angry, just hammer a nail into a plank. And then each time when you're able to tolerate, resist your anger, you can pull out the nail. And he actually, first months is like, wow, so many nails. And then slowly he was able to pull them all. And then teacher says, look at this, what happened? So many holes there. He said, that's what happens. When you get angry, you say these things, you leave all these dents, all these holes in other people's heart. So you have to reflect on this. And you can bring in your own experience. What has happened with anger, when you get into anger. And then when you think of this, then you will arrive at this conviction level, that, oh, anger is not good, hatred is not good, jealousy is not good. So you need to see that first in order to have this resolve to tackle the destructive emotions. You need to see the faults, the shortcomings of these mental, negative mental states. Once you realize that these, the faults of negativities, then you have this resolve. So now with that resolve, you need to understand the causes of reflection. What brings all these negativities? Why, how anger arises? So if you don't look, or if you are unable to identify the source, then your method to fix may be wrong, may become wrong. So as we discussed earlier, that, you know, the source is there, you are trying to tackle on the other side. So that won't help. So that's why we need to understand the cause of affliction. And as we discussed earlier, normally our tendency, our habit is to always search outside us. Troublemaker is always outside of us. So now we have to look in. So why we have this? Why we don't realize that we have, that the troublemaker is within us, is that we don't pay attention. We fail to pay close attention to our internal mental process. Let's say if you get into a rage. Of course, at that moment, it is not possible to really check. But after the incident, you sit down and think through, rewind and replay. Maybe you can play in a slow motion and see how it started. First, you think that that person is 100% to be blamed. But when you rewind and play it again, oh, if I didn't say that, if I hadn't said that, he wouldn't have said this. There will be so many of these hypothetical situations. Then you say, oh, actually, it's not 100% his fault or her fault. So we need to see that. We have to pay close attention. If we do that, if we really engage in deeper reflection, we will be able to identify the source or the cause of our afflictions. Once we are able to have that identified, then yeah, we will be able to do something about it. It is like if you want to shoot an arrow, first you need to find the target, wherever that bullseye is. Once you have the target, then you can try. Without any target, you won't be able to hit the bullseye. So it's like that. And then there's something called mental proliferation. So if we fail to pay close attention, then we won't be able to realize that there is something called mental proliferation. So mental proliferation is a scientific term. They use it, psychologists use it. It's what happens is when we have all five senses. So we are bombarded with countless stimuli. We see this, we see this. Every time we see this, something that is interesting, there is a lot of thought process going on. And one from one incident, one stimuli, it can lead to something else. Is like, how did this happen? It's completely unrelated. So that's what is called the mental proliferation. So if we pay close attention, then we will be able to block that. We can try. Do we have time? Oh, it's already. We haven't even got into the. I think I talk too much. It just reminded me of a story. So that one time there was a new priest who was transferred to a new town. So he was to give his first sermon, and he really prepared. He prepared 3 hours sermon. So when the final big day arrived, only one person showed up. So he was disappointed. So he asked the person. He said that, you know, this is my first sermon, and I have prepared. I put a lot of effort. But you see, you turn up. So what do you think I should do? So the person said that, I don't know. I am a farmer. When I go and feed my cows, and if I see there's only one cow, I still feed the cow. Okay, he got it. Okay, I got it. I got you. So then he went on with his sermon, 3 hours sermon. And then after he finished, he came back to this peasant farmer and asked him, what do you think? I don't know. I am a simple farmer. When I go and feed my cows, and if I see there's only one cow, I don't force all that food that's meant for the rest of the cow. So likewise, I think I am just flooding you with all this. Yeah, of course, we will do during one of the meditation session time. There's an exercise which it's good to get this idea of mental proliferation. So today we don't have time. I wanted to show you this. This is our nature. Hey. What do you think?
Yeah, that's how it is.
This is us. We are very quick to make judgments. We are very quick to assume. This is what happens. So we need to pay close attention to how our mind works. Yeah, I would do the same thing. So just to... I think we better move on. So we know what meditation is. So there are two types of meditation. Anybody want to volunteer?
Analytical and placements.
Analytical and
placements.
Okay, another term? Calm abiding, stabilizing meditation, concentration meditation. Concentration meditation, some call shamatha, some call calm abiding. Some call stabilizing meditation, and then analytical meditation. I use the vipassana here, but vipassana is not really an analytical meditation, is part of vipassana. So what is concentration meditation? You all know, yeah? To focus one's mind on one particular object to attain a level, a single-pointed concentration. Here we are trying to achieve our single-pointed concentration. So at the moment, like me, when I try to concentrate on something, no, not even, I think, 30 seconds, my mind wanders. So if we have that kind of mental fluctuation, then yeah, we won't be able to achieve anything.
Restlessness.
Yeah, even when I try to read some books sometimes, but it has improved. When I try to do this meditation. But earlier when I started read, I'm reading three lines here, my mind is somewhere else. And I was like, what did I read? I have to go back. But if you're able to develop this concentration, then yes, you are there. Even when you do our sadhana, sometimes you don't realize, hey, already finished, how come? Because your mind is somewhere else. So we need to develop an analytical meditation. Of course, this is very important. Yeah, without analytical meditation, there's no way we will achieve any realizations. But we need both. Analytical meditation is develop clear understanding. So we do that all the time. We are very expert in doing analytical meditation. Let's say if you have difficulty with another person, why do you treat or view that person as your enemy or person with difficulty? Because you have already done this analytical meditation. or this person did this to me, or one time she did this, well, all these things, she was doing all this. So we have all this thought out, all these reasons why that person is. So that's analytical meditation. In text, it says that we have 9 reasons. Let's say enemy. We have 9 reasons why that person is our enemy. In the past, that person, we just put in 3. In the past, he has harmed me. He is harming me now. He will harm in the future. In the past, he has harmed my near ones. He is harming now. He will harm in future. And then third one is, he is helping my enemy in the past. He helped my enemy in the past. He is helping my enemy now. He will help my enemy. So we have these reasons. Why you don't like one person? Why you like another person? So we do that all the time. So now, just to bring that to the positive mental states, why is compassion good? Why is reducing your anger good? So you have to bring in your own life experience. And to achieve that conviction, that's all about analytical meditation, generally. Of course, you can go specific. So why we need, so you have heard, you know, those who have read and listened to teaching, they say, oh, the combination, the union is important. From the picture you can see, you can understand, yeah? Because this person, first of all, you need a steady hand. And even if you have a steady hand, if your axe is not sharp or is blunt, you won't be able to cut through. Likewise, we need to have a stable mind, steady mind. And then you need to have this wisdom. Through this wisdom and the steady calm, the concentration, then, yeah, you will achieve your goal. So another metaphor is this one. Have you played this during your younger days? Yeah, you use the magnifying glass to burn piece of paper. First of all, you need that magnifying glass. Not all glass will not do. And then you have to have a steady hand. If you keep shaking your hand, you won't be able to light that up. So what is the benefit of doing this concentration meditation? So today we'll just focus mainly on concentration. So there are 2 characteristics. First is the mental stability. So when you try to focus our mind on an object, what happens is we get distracted. That's why we call it monkey-like mind. It jumps from a tree to tree. It jumps from one object to another. It just chases after our thoughts. So when we do meditation, so we are able to tame our mind to be stable. So no matter whatever it comes, we will be able to remain firm on our object. And then clarity. Sometimes when we sit down, we don't get the clarity because we are really feeling drowsy or, you know, lethargic. Yeah. So these are the 2 characteristics. And have you heard about this? Wandering mind is an unhappy mind. Have you heard this before? Okay. So this is, our mind's all the time wandering. We know that even when we try to do practice, that is supposed, we are supposed to be in concentration. But we know, yeah, mind is somewhere else, even though we are sitting here. So this is, I think it's a bit of a, time is an issue. They did a very interesting research.
Valuable. It's that we expect them to bring us happiness. Now, in the last 50 years, we Americans have gotten a lot of the things that we want. We're richer, we live longer, we have access to technology that would have seemed like science fiction just a few years ago. The paradox of happiness is that even though the objective conditions of our lives have improved dramatically, we haven't actually gotten any happier. Maybe because these conventional notions of progress haven't delivered big benefits in terms of happiness, there's been an increased interest in recent years in happiness itself. People have been debating the causes of happiness for a really long time, in fact, for thousands of years, but it seems like many of those debates remain unresolved. As with many other domains in life, I think the scientific method has the potential to answer this question. In fact, in the last few years, there's been an explosion in research on happiness. For example, we've learned a lot about its demographics, how things like income and education, gender and marriage relate to it. But one of the puzzles this has revealed is that factors like these don't seem to have a particularly strong effect. Yes, it's better to make more money rather than less, or to graduate from college instead of dropping out, but the differences in happiness tend to be small. Which leaves the question, what are the big causes of happiness? I think that's a question we haven't really answered yet, but I think something that has the potential to be an answer is that maybe happiness has an awful lot to do with the contents of our moment-to-moment experiences. It certainly seems that we're going about our lives, that what we're doing, who we're with, what we're thinking about, have a big influence on our happiness, and yet these are the very factors that have been very difficult, in fact almost impossible, for scientists to study. A few years ago, I came up with a way to study people's happiness, moment to moment, as they're going about their daily lives on a massive scale all over the world, something we've never been able to do before. Called trackyourhappiness.org, it uses the iPhone to monitor people's happiness in real time. How does this work? Basically, I send people signals at random points throughout the day, and then I ask them a bunch of questions about their moment-to-moment experience at the instant just before the signal. The idea is that if we can watch how people's happiness goes up and down over the course of the day, minute to minute in some cases, and try to understand how what people are doing, who they're with, what they're thinking about, and all the other factors that describe our day, how those might relate to those changes in happiness, we might be able to discover some of the things that really have a big influence on happiness. We've been fortunate with this project to collect quite a lot of data, a lot more data of this kind than I think has ever been collected before. Over 650,000 real-time reports from over 15,000 people. And it's not just a lot of people, it's a really diverse group. People from a wide range of ages, from 18 to late 80s, a wide range of incomes, education levels, people who are married, divorced, widowed, etc. They collectively represent everyone in 86 occupational categories and hail from over 80 countries. What I'd like to do with the rest of my time with you today is talk a little bit about one of the areas that we've been investigating, and that's mind-wandering. As human beings, we have this unique ability to have our minds stray away from the present. This guy is sitting here working on his computer, and yet he could be thinking about the vacation he had last month, wondering what he's going to have for dinner, maybe he's worried that he's going bald. This ability to focus our attention on something other than the present is really amazing. It allows us to learn and plan and reason in ways that no other species of animal can. And yet, it's not clear what the relationship is between our use of this ability and our happiness. You've probably heard people suggest that you should stay focused on the present. Be here now, you've probably heard 100 times. Maybe to really be happy, we need to stay completely immersed and focused on our experience in the moment. Maybe these people are right, maybe mind-wandering is a bad thing. On the other hand, when our minds wander, they're unconstrained. We can't change the physical reality in front of us, but we can go anywhere in our minds. Since we know people want to be happy, maybe when our minds wander, they're going someplace happier than the place that they're leaving. It would make a lot of sense. In other words, maybe the pleasures of the mind allow us to increase our happiness with mind wandering. Well, since I'm a scientist, I'd like to try to resolve this debate with some data. In particular, I'd like to present some data to you from 3 questions that I asked with Track Your Happiness. Remember, this is sort of moment-to-moment experience in people's real lives. The 3 questions. The first one is a happiness question. How do you feel on a scale ranging from very bad to very good? Second, an activity question. What are you doing on a list of 22 different activities, including things like eating, working, and watching TV? And finally, a mind-wandering question. Are you thinking about something other than what you're currently doing? People could say no, in other words, I'm focused only on my task, or yes, I am thinking about something else, and the topic of those thoughts are pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant. Any of those yes responses are what we call mind wandering. Look behind. This graph shows happiness on the vertical axis. You can see that bar there representing how happy people are when they're focused on the present, when they're not mind wandering. As it turns out, people are substantially less happy when their minds are wandering than when they're not. Now you might look at this result and say, okay, sure, on average people are less happy when they're mind wandering, but surely when their minds are straying away from something that wasn't...
I think we made the point. Yeah, so this you can understand that the benefit of being in the present moment, and it is understandable. So why we have people having depression and anxiety? So depression, one reason is rumination. When you think of your past, what happened in the past, all this, you get depressed. And then when you think of your future, you get anxiety. I mean, that excessively think of your future, what will happen, all this. You worry a lot. You worry in the future, of the future, then anxiety arises. So if you're able to focus in the present moment, you are just being aware of what you are doing. So many of things that we talked about earlier, because we are not aware of what we are doing, it has become automatic. So when we are aware of what our actions are, what we are doing, then there is a chance that we will be able to respond rather than react. All these times we just react. There's a stimulus, we just react. There's no response. There's no responding. It's all reaction. But when we're able to create that, what is called emotional gap. So let's say if somebody says some very irritating or nasty things, so reaction is normally just get angry and retort. But if we're able to create this gap between that stimulus and your reaction, then you will have the time to think and choose what to respond or not choose not to respond. So that's all will only happen when you pay close attention, when you live in the present moment. I think we are running out of time. We will stop here and we will pick up on the next Sunday.
Do you have the feeling word? I mean, could you go a little longer if you wanted to? I mean, you set the parameter of time.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried that, if we talk too much, then brain doesn't really hold that well. Yeah, we have no rush. I'll be here for some time, so it's okay. We can take it slowly, at a slow pace. And my intention is to go through this because every alternate you have seen in the email that every alternate Sunday we are doing meditation, going to do meditation. So that's why I thought that I will just introduce this so that everybody is on the same page. Some of you already do your meditation, so you already know. But if we have newcomers, who are not familiar with this, I thought I'll just do the introduction today. So that from next Saturdays, or next Saturdays, we are ready to meditate. That is the whole idea. But because I talked a lot, so it's kind of add into our time. Okay, so I can take a few questions if you have. Yes?
When you talk about happiness versus not being happy, it seems so much as dependent on attachment.
Yeah, of course.
Millionaire who is so attached to his money that he always has to have more, and you can have a millionaire who's not attached. And I'm thinking of people like Bill Gates who give money away or do wonderful things with their money. And you can have somebody that's earning $30,000 who's so attached to their money, they're unhappy, and someone that isn't. And
yeah.
It seems it's all, like you said, it's in the mind.
Mm,
it's how we perceive the attachment, and it's usually, it sounds like how it affects kind of a self-centered
definitely.
Attachment, like, I need this,
yes,
for my happiness. Mm. But when you get outside of that and do for others and you're not attached to it, you freely give it,
yes.
There's much more happiness.
Yeah, I agree with you. So I think in monastery, the monks, now maybe it has changed. Those days, during my time in monastery, we are very poor. We were very poor. Most of the monks, you see that they were just walking around, even a penny in their pocket. But look at them, so happy. And I remember my early years in monastery. I was quite happy. But there were times that I don't even have a penny in my pocket. And during the night debate, after you debate through, let's say, 1 hour or something, you are allowed to go out to, pee or whatever it is. So some will go to the monastery's canteen to have a cup of tea. And so I remember one time, and my classmates were debating, and they said, oh, let's go for tea. And normally when Rinpoche goes with the monks, Rinpoche is expected to pay. And I didn't have a penny in my pocket. So I have to say, oh, I don't feel like going. But actually it was not. I don't have money. So it is a bit embarrassing not to pay, let monk pay. But I was quite happy then. And I think now as well, I like to think. Yeah, so it's, you see, it's not about money. And then you have those, as you mentioned, millionaires. I think some of the millionaires, I think they have difficulty sleeping. They have so much worry, constantly watching the fluctuation of the stock market. And I have friends who are quite wealthy, but he sleeps with his phone. Every time, he has to see what is the, what do you call it? the stock market. Yeah. If it is false, he has to sell or buy or whatever it is. And then I know of this owner of a bank. He is a multi-billionaire. But he doesn't have the freedom to even walk to the shopping mall. And he walks from, 8 to 9 or something. I don't think he is happier than me. But then when you look at the homeless people, sometimes they are happier, So you can see that it is all about here. If you are contented with what you have, you're so happy. And then in terms of giving, as you mentioned that, I forget your name.
Jean.
Jean told me that she has a vegetable garden, and she gave away vegetables every 2 days, and it makes her so happy. So that's it. So we know that, this, to make ourselves happy, there are these things, small things that we can do. So why not? Any other question?
So we should say
So when I think about concentration, I feel like it takes effort to concentrate. And so I wonder why concentration is a part of calm abiding. Those two words kind of for me seem in opposition of each other.
Yeah. Of course, we say calm abiding. So we are here. So when you practice, then you will arrive at a stage where you feel so calm. You have no resistance from your body, from your mind. if you want to. They call this term pliancy, is it? Pliancy?
Pliancy.
Pliancy. Yeah. This malleable, what is it?
Malleable.
Yeah. So you can sit in meditation for hours and hours. You don't feel tired. And you focus on any object for hours, days. There's no exhaustion. Instead, there's bliss. You have no difficulty. So why we feel at the moment, it appears that there's a contrast? Because we haven't developed that skill. So we are trying to develop that skill. So of course, first time, it's a contrive. Even bodhicitta always has something called contrive and spontaneity, spontaneous. So first is you have to put effort to generate that. But it's like muscle building. So if you consistently practice, you will see that get better. But sometimes you will see that when you do for 1 week, you will see that, oh, the second week, how come, you know, my mind seems more distracted. But that's not actually. Your mind is not more distracted, but just that you became more aware of your mind wandering. Earlier, yeah, you are not aware of that. So you see that, oh, you are focusing on there. But then as you practice, you will notice that, oh, your mind wanders a lot. And that's where you feel that, hey, instead of improving, you feel that I am declining in my practice, but that's not. Yeah, this happens in the beginning. But if you put effort, yeah, it will become easier. Sorry, somebody else? There was a question? Just now? No, is it? Okay. Any questions? If not, we will stop here. Okay.
Save the dedication prayer.
Yes, please. Ma ge ba na ma ge ju ro je ge ba nyam ba me ba aya kon ne kon do pe wa ra sho e la me ku ze ra de je nam ga ra tin le cho ju ge ba da lo za ten be de me sa so mo ge to ve me se ta do ne ju ro je Rāvē kōrvē shēngāṁ zhōn, pēndāṁ dēwā mālū chūmē nē, chērē zēwāṁ tēnzīṁ gāzū yī, shābē sētē pāṁ tēngyūrū jē. Chētārā gēmbā dāṁ kundū sāmbū tēyā tēshēn, tētā kuñjē jēsū tālō jē, gēwā tētā tāṁ jē rābdū ngō. Yawa damje je ngowa kala chodo ngaba Taje kewe tsawa digun jang Sambo chuji rabdo ngowa kis. Okay, thank you very much for attending the talk today. And this week you try experiment. You try to closely pay attention to your mental state, the workings of your mind, and see, you know, whether that has any effect. Then we can discuss that next Sunday.